Welcome back to another episode of Hawk Off the Press. My name is Madison Herzig. I am the Iowa football beat reporter for the Gazette. And this week we have longtime Penn State beat reporter who has covered the Nittany Lions at just about every outlet you can imagine.
Pretty much.
Now has a Substack page called Inside the Lions. This is Audrey Snyder. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Madison. I appreciate it. It's been a quiet week around here. This is a good reminder that there is a football game on Saturday, that Penn State has more going on than a coaching search, a quarterback injury, and all of that.
You haven't been busy at all or anything like that. Nothing out of the ordinary. No, but it truly has been a chaotic week. I know we were talking a little bit before we started recording, but you were saying to me, you know, this is something that nobody expected at the beginning of the year, but you had a pretty clear instinct after the loss to Northwestern on Saturday night that this was a possibility. I'm just curious, what was your gut reaction to seeing the news, kind of hearing about the news when you were looking to confirm it, and then just kind of the immediate fallout that's been since then?
For sure. I mean, it was surreal, and like it still is surreal. Like when Penn State sent out a graphic, it's either late, I think it was late Sunday night or early Monday, it was like, thank you, Coach Franklin. And I was like, yeah, like it's really it. I mean, it was, I say that I felt pretty strongly about it Saturday night that he was going to be done, just because like the fan response was so toxic in Beaver Stadium, and you know, he's walking off the field and the fans are just relentlessly booing him. And it's like, this wasn't also the first time that it happened. Like you go back a couple weeks and they're tied with Oregon at the half of the whiteout and there's fire Franklin chants. Because it's like, hey, here's a big game, and a game that, you know, Penn State fans have been waiting to see this team win a big game for years under James Franklin, and it didn't happen. And then obviously you followed up with UCLA with a loss, and then you followed up with a loss to Northwestern. And it's like, in my head, I'm thinking, you can't keep trotting this coach out there with this fan response. It's not fair to him, when you probably know as an athletic director, like, that you're going to move on. And that was the impression that I got. And sure enough, by Sunday afternoon, it was final that Penn State fired James Franklin, and the coaching search is underway in mid-October. Not exactly what I was expecting when I picked Penn State to go 11-1 and make an appearance in the national championship game. But what I will tell you, Madison, when I picked 11-1, I said that the one loss could potentially be to Iowa, because Penn State has had a lot of difficulty over the years playing in Kinnick Stadium. Especially at night, it gets loud. I love covering games there. I absolutely think the atmosphere is awesome at Kinnick. I'm looking forward to getting out there this weekend. But yeah, now Penn State's got to go out there with a redshirt freshman quarterback, Ethan Grunkemeyer, who will make his first collegiate start. So yeah, slow news week around here.
nothing like the Big Ten to keep everybody on their toes. No, yep. I think the big reaction, more than anything else, specifically from a lot of Iowa fans, was wondering, how is that going to impact this game? Because not only did Penn State lose its head coach, that, like you said, I mean, this was a team that was expected to make a national championship game appearance, you know, 3 months ago, honestly, 3 weeks ago. They were the number two team in the country going into that Oregon game. But also, they'll be without Drew Aller. And that was a huge loss to that team as well. How has the team responded to that? You just spoke to a bunch of the players and interim head coach Terry Smith right before we recorded this. And so I'm curious, you know, how has the team responded to the amount of adversity, mental adversity that they've had the last, you know, 3 days?
Yeah, it's been like, you could tell the raw emotions this week from players, from Terry Smith. In fact, Penn State, like, typically they practice Sundays and the players are off Monday, and they got the players together Sunday and had James Franklin, which was important to James. Like, he wanted to be the ones to tell him that, to tell them that he was done. So he delivers that message Sunday afternoon at like 1:45. The news goes public at 2:00, and Penn State did not practice Sunday. And interim head coach Terry Smith was like, yeah, these guys are not, we're not doing this today. Like, we cannot do this today. And so Terry said, you know, every day since then, it's gotten a little more lively. And, you know, he felt that Wednesday at practice, that it was like, okay, it was a step better than Tuesday. It was a step better than Monday. But yeah, there's so much emotion around this. And there's also a sense of guilt from players. Like, that's the one thing that really came up this week. And Terry Smith even hit on it Wednesday night. And he said, you know, yeah, we all feel it, that if we would have played better, if we would have coached better, James Franklin still has a job. And we heard that from Penn State's senior center and team captain, Nick Dawkins. And Terry Smith got with Penn State's Leadership Council, which is like a group of typically older guys, but also some younger leaders on the team that the coaching staff appoints. And those guys met this week, and Smith's message to them was like, okay, we got to get our toughness back, we got to get our grittiness back, and we got to get our swag back. And this has been a team the last 2 weeks that just has looked lifeless. And, you know, you talk about, can one loss really break a program? That's exactly what happened after that Oregon game. I mean, you go back to that and you're like, I mean, again, I think about it. This is an 18-day swing where you go from leading the Ducks in the first overtime, coming down to fourth down, where if Penn State gets a stop there, they beat Oregon. And honestly, and this might sound a little crazy, I think if they win that game, they are 6-0 right now. And you see the other side of it, and it's like they lost that game. They spent so much time preparing for that all offseason. And this team just absolutely folded. So, yeah, so much adversity. You add the young quarterback into the mix. We have no idea what we're going to see from Ethan Grunkemeyer. And, you know, it's also, too, like for all these guys, this is an audition for the next coaching staff. This is an audition for the transfer portal. For these coaches, it's, hey, where are you going to be coaching next year? Like, so much of this has spun toward the future all truly in an 18-day span.
Yeah, I mean, it really, when you think about it, and it has exactly been 18 days, it just, it's mind-blowing because of that lead up to that Penn State Oregon game. That was a game that everybody, that any college football fan, Big Ten, not Big Ten, casual, diehard, they had that game circled on their calendar for months since the schedule came out, just because everyone knew that was going to be the game. And for it to go that way, I mean, I honestly completely agree with you. I think if Penn State won that game, got that fourth down stop, that they would be a 6-0 football team right now. And this would be an entirely different conversation that we're having. But I think that your point to these players having a little bit of guilt and admitting that, I think that's something that maybe a lot of people might realize when you think about it, but maybe like it's not something that's been mentioned a bunch. And that's, I feel like so much of the emotional weight of this has got to be really interesting for you to cover. Somebody's been around with this program for so long. Have you seen something like this happen where you've noticed such a visible emotional change with the players like this?
Yeah, I mean, this is a tough one just because, you know, James Franklin was here for 11 plus almost 12 years. And he, like you think about that point in a program, every single person in that football building, we're talking hundreds of people, right? Players, staffers, personnel folks, equipment managers, nutritionists, graduate assistant, personnel people, analysts, like he had a hand in bringing all of those people into that building. And he was extremely hands-on. Like there were not many things that he did not notice as a beat writer. Like you're thinking like tweets and lines and stories, like he saw everything. Yeah, like there's that emotional response, and obviously it's much different given the context of it, but I covered, you know, the end of the Joe Paterno era and how that happened when I was a student. That was my senior year as a student at Penn State, and, you know, you cover that, and then I covered Bill O'Brien when he was here in that season and the emotion when he left, and still that was a small span. That was here for a year. And then you talk about somebody that's been here for almost a dozen years. Like it is talking to players Wednesday night. Some of the guys were like, yeah, we've known James Franklin 6-7 years. Like the tone of this week has felt like a wake. Like it really is a bizarre thing. And I wrote on my Substack today on Inside the Lions. I was like, it felt like we were all like eulogizing James Franklin this week. Like it was bizarre. But, I mean, this is also like the year that fans were waiting for and that everything was geared toward this year. And you went all in with all your resources and rev share. And to have everything blow up in their faces by mid-October is just, I mean, it's unfathomable. It's surreal. Certainly one of the biggest flops in the history of college football. And yeah, I mean, I've never covered something where it's gone south like this on field so quickly, you know, and you still look at this roster and you're like, there's so much talent on this team on paper. Like, what happened, right? And this defense, like, that should have been one of the best in the country is not. And why is it? I mean, it is really baffling. And so many of the questions that, you know, I'm asking players and coaches, and we as a media corps are asking players and coaches, are so many of the questions that they're asking internally. Like, they don't really know what happened that they got to this point either, which makes it pretty crazy.
Yeah, and that's such a hard thing to try and answer too when you are a reporter, because if they don't know how to answer it themselves, it makes it hard for them to explain it to you.
100%.
And then fans are wondering what's going on, and everyone's just kind of sitting here looking at each other like, I don't know, do you know? And I think that that's just made it, I think it's just, I can understand the difficulty of not only covering it as a reporter, but also just trying to understand and make sense of all of this, because it has happened so fast. I remember sitting on the first episode that I did for this podcast saying, you know, we always made the joke that, you know, there's always one game that Penn State drops that they shouldn't have. Which one is it going to be? And being me saying, you know, that matchup, it could happen. That could be the game. But then also saying it and following it up with, but they also have some of the best players in the country. You look at that roster and it's basically an NFL fantasy lineup waiting to happen. Yep. And I still feel like on paper, that's a true statement. It just hasn't shown up this season. And I think that it's so interesting to see it. How much of the talent do you think is still available to be used and to be seen at that level, despite all of the chaos? I mean, is if at all?
Yeah, no. And one of the things that I brought up this week, and I asked Terry Smith about it in terms of like simplification. And this is a defense that went out last year. You bring in Jim Knowles from Ohio State, you make him the highest paid coordinator in the country, and there's a problem. Like, the players cannot understand his system, and it's to the point where they're trying their hardest, but there is a legitimate learning curve, and you're seeing it play out on the field. And, you know, I asked Terry this week, like, are there things that you can do at this point in the year to simplify the defense? Because James Franklin even told us a few weeks ago, he said, yeah, our defense is not playing nearly as fast or as aggressive as they had in the past. And it's like, well, why is that? Because you do return so much of that same talent. And it's the system and trying to get guys to understand it. And so much so that a lot of the defensive backs have shown up to defensive staff meetings and they're going in there and saying, like, okay, coaching staff and Jim Knowles, like, oh, we better, like, this is what you want. When you say this, this is what you want. And this is what the linebacker does here. Okay. Like, I've never covered a program where you've had players, like maybe quarterbacks, but not defensive players, going into staff meetings to try and better understand what they're being taught. So, like, I think you have to put some of that on the teaching side of it. But yeah, I mean, the talent's still there. The thing that's so weird is we were all hyping them up in the preseason with this offensive line, and this could be the best offensive line in the country and the best O-line at Penn State since 1994. They've been horrendous. And it's like, you look at it, you're like, well, what happened there? And it's, you know, been kind of this weird combination of one guy every play or one guy every here and there that's been off. And that's impacted the run game, where they should have had the best backfield in the country with Nick Singleton and Catron Allen. And Nick Singleton has had a really rough year. And you say, well, why is that? Well, part of it is that it's the offensive line. But the other part is that he has a new position coach, and this new position coach that came in the winter is coaching him differently and trying to have him think more. Like, this is truly a team that has been overthinking this season. And you could see it. We could see it in non-conference play. And then it's like, okay, like, maybe they're going to figure it out, whatever. And they didn't. And so now I think at this point you have to say, all right, like, you're playing with house money. You're 3-3. Like, I think it helps now that you have a redshirt freshman quarterback that you can tailor the offense to him and probably simplify some things on that side of the ball. But yeah, the talent is still there for the most part, but we just haven't seen it.
Yeah, well, let's get into some of the X's and O's with this a little bit. You spoke with Ethan Grunkemeyer for the first time earlier today. It was Wednesday night. What did you learn from him? This is going to be his first collegiate start. He's sat and watched Drew Aller play. We really don't know anything about him. He's come in a couple times to the tail end of games. He finished the Northwestern game, but what did you learn about it? Do you see anything from him that maybe you might learn not know if you haven't been paying attention to the tail end of every Penn State game.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because there's a little more mobility there than there is with Drew Aller, because Ethan's much smaller, big arm. Like, I think this is somebody that they can push the ball down the field with. From a leadership and intangible perspective, I remember when he committed to Penn State and going to his high school and talking to him and watching a high school game. Like, the guy's a leader, and talking to teammates this week, they're like, yeah, like, we believe in Gronk. Like, he's stepped talk about stepping into a bad spot. You come on the field with 4th and 3, with the game and essentially the season on the line against Northwestern, and your buddy Drew Aller just limps off to the sideline, is getting on a cart on the sideline, and like, hey, kid, you're up. Good luck. I mean, that is what he stepped into last week, and, you know, did not move the ball anywhere on that 4th down. But I think there's some good things that they can build around with him just because of that mobility and the simplification. I think they can probably, they need to get back to using their tight ends a little bit more. I think maybe we see that with a young quarterback come into play. Drew Aller, so this is the other side of it. Like, Aller hasn't been with the team this week. He's been meeting with doctors and stuff like that. So he's been talking to Grunkemeyer every day. They've been texting, communicating. And one of the things that Ethan told us Wednesday night was, yeah, Drew's trying to tell me and explain to me, like, hey, on the road, it's going to be really loud. Like, do this. Make sure, you know, when you're in the huddle and you're calling out plays, you're at the line of scrimmage, like, you got to yell and you have to be loud. And just trying to, like, help him along with all of these little things. And, you know, they say it here, and I'm sure they say it probably everywhere, like, oh, prepare like you're the starter. Well, we're going to see Ethan Grunkemeyer's preparation. And this is somebody, too, that he was in a close camp competition for that backup job with Jackson Smolik in the preseason. So this isn't somebody that, you know, you said from the get-go, oh, this guy's the surefire number two. Like, no, there was a competition that played out there through the preseason. So, yeah, this is also an addition for Grunkemeyer for whatever next year brings, whatever the next coaching staff, if he's a fit for them or not. This is a massive opportunity.
Yeah, and with kind of learning how to do all of this stuff, I mean, the competition in the preseason obviously heightens some of that expectation and maybe that pressure that he'll have to face. And then coming into Kinnick Stadium, which not only has Penn State struggled at playing at Kinnick Stadium in previous history, but that is an intimidating environment to play, as you were referencing earlier. How do you think this Penn State offense, as much as they've been dealing with bumps and bruises along the way, how do you think they're going to try and manage it? Do you see them handing the ball off more? Do you see them trying to use his arm? Where do you see that balance coming in?
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see what Terry Smith does, because he is, like, he was a wide receiver at Penn State, but he's been the cornerbacks coach here. So more like defensive minded. Right. So it's really going to be interesting as the head coach, or does he just dictate to Andy Kotelnicki, the OC, who is like super creative, but also like we've seen too much overthinking from the offense this year. I'm curious how they kind of play it and what they want to do. I mean, here's the other thing, and this is going to sound super simplistic, but it blew up in Penn State's face when they were at Kinnick Stadium 4 years ago. In that game, Sean Clifford, Penn State, they go up, Clifford gets hurt, he exits, and they have to go to their backup quarterback, Taquan Roberson. And Roberson, his center could not hear the quarterback, could not hear the cadence. Like, they're going with the clap cadence. He cannot hear it. And Penn State kept getting penalty after penalty. And afterward, James Franklin was like, yeah, like, this was a failure. Like, our quarterback was not loud enough at the line of scrimmage, which is insane. But Penn State, I think, learned from that lesson of, hey, here you go again in Kinnick Stadium. This time you at least have all week to prepare for it. The crowd noise was amped Wednesday night, trying to get Grunkemeyer ready for that. But yeah, I mean, just things as simple as the quarterback center exchange when you're working with a new guy, being able to hear the snap count, like all those little things that you take for granted when you have a veteran quarterback, that's now all on the table. And oh yeah, it's a night game at a really tough place to play. This is a really rough spot for Ethan Grunkemeyer to be thrown into, but hey, it's an opportunity. It's why you come to, you know, these big time programs for these chances.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny you mentioned the false starts. Ironically enough, one of the very first things that I was told when I took this job, started learning about the history of Iowa and trying to crash course myself as much as I could, I've had those back to back false starts mentioned on a multitude of times, as like iconic moments in Iowa football, like Big Ten history. Yeah. So it's not surprising that you're seeing Penn State, especially Drew Aller, like letting Ethan know, like, you gotta be loud. Like, you have to be, mm-hmm. and it is going to be, I mean, it's a sold out game. They announced it earlier this week that it's going to be a sold out one. But I'm curious, from your perspective, you've covered a lot of Big Ten football. You've seen Iowa and Penn State play against each other. From what you've gathered this year, how do you feel like Iowa matches up with Penn State? Obviously, a lot's changed in the last, 3 days. But how have you seen the Hawkeyes kind of evolve throughout this year? And what do you think Penn State might need to do to try and get a win?
Yeah, the thing that Penn State needs to do is the thing that they've been struggling to do most of this year, which has been also perplexing because we had asked James Franklin about this a lot, is they have a good running game with Catron Allen. That should be Penn State's bread and butter. But they've decided to continue operating in a timeshare between Singleton and Allen. And it's like Allen gets rolling and, looks really good, and then he might be out for two series. And then Singleton's like not going anywhere. And so you lose that momentum. And to me, like, that's, especially with a young quarterback, like, Penn State's going to have to run the ball. You'd like to see them come out and try to get Grunkemeyer into some kind of rhythm early on, with some short throws and some screens. Like, I could see them trying to go that route with Nick Singleton because of his speed and his ability to get to the edge. But what I thought Penn State was going to be built around this year, back when this once promising season started, I thought they were going to be built around this defense. And to me, that was the thing that could tilt games in Penn State's favor, because historically they have had good defenses during James Franklin's tenure. And, this pass rush has got to be a lot better. I think that's the one area where Deni Dennis Sutton, Penn State's defensive end, he could break this game open. Like, he is that kind of NFL talent. But again, if your defense is overthinking, good luck. I mean, that's the other part. And, you then compound it with the injury that Penn State lost their second best linebacker in Tony Rojas a couple weeks ago. And so now it's like you've got deficiencies at linebacker that you can't make up for, because you're in a 4-2-5 defense. And what do you try and do? Like, do you do more 4-3, which is what we saw him try and do last week against Northwestern, to get another linebacker on the field, because their one guy, Dom DeLuca, keeps getting exposed? Like, it is, Iowa can absolutely attack Penn State in the linebacking core. Obviously, Iowa, you're always thinking defensive backs. Like, again, back to August, my thinking was Drew Aller throws a pick or two in Kinnick Stadium. And I just, to me, like, that's the, you do not know what you're going to get from Penn State at this point. Like, it is, I'm not picking them to win the game, just because it's like, after what they've put on the last 2 weeks, right? Like, this is a team that scores 14 points in a hurry in the fourth quarter against Oregon, but then can't do anything against Northwestern. Like, it has been that crazy. But yeah, I think Iowa certainly has the advantage in this one in a lot of areas.
Yeah, it's been so interesting watching this matchup basically turn on its head as quickly as it has. Because I think that this was obviously a game that a lot of people said, this could be the game where the Kinnick Stadium magic, where a sneaky win that just kind of makes everything a lot more fun for Iowa fans, like that Penn State game could be the game. And then now it's a, this wouldn't be a sneaky win anymore. Kinnick Stadium magic. This would genuinely be, the matchup is just in Iowa's favor. So I'm curious, you've, again, kind of similar question in the sense of, what can Penn State do to try and beat Iowa? What does Iowa have to be really, really good at to make sure that the Hawkeyes are the ones to end up on the right side and expose maybe this fractured Penn State team?
It's going to sound so Big Ten of me to say this, special teams, honestly, like, that's the, so I mentioned Deni Dennis Sutton earlier. He has blocked two punts in back-to-back weeks. So, and this is someone, like, you talk about creative ways that you want to get your best players involved. They've had Dennis Sutton on the punt return unit all year and have been lining up trying to block punts. Well, he does it against UCLA in a play that really gave Penn State life and brought them back into that game for a while. And then he did it last week against Northwestern. And it's like, okay, so in typical Big Ten fashion, you have that. But Iowa fans are going to remember this name, Devontae Ross, who was at Troy last year. He's a Penn State transfer portal wide receiver, torched Iowa last year. In fact, that game was the game that Penn State's coaches, when they were in the transfer portal looking at his film, they're like, all right, if he can do this against Iowa, like, we believe this guy can do it in the Big Ten. And Devontae Ross is Penn State's punt returner. Obviously, he had success doing that at Troy, too. He showed some really good signs of life back there this year, but he also muffed a punt last week that was critical. So, you know, you just look at the ways that this game can change, and it feels like, I mean, I remember way back when I was a student at Penn State and Iowa comes in here and Adrian Claiborne, right, turns the game on its head because of special teams. Like, to me, you can't talk about Penn State, Iowa, and not talk about special teams. And I think that's the one area where, you know, if you're Iowa, got to have your head on a swivel for 33 on those punt blocks, because he's been absolutely on a tear.
Well, you mentioned Devontae Ross in that Troy game. You know, Kirk Ferentz was asked earlier this week, you know, you're seeing the same guy again. What do you think about it? And he immediately was like, I don't remember where I was. I remember what I thought when I realized he was going to Penn State. And I mean, he had nothing but high praise for him and how well he played against Iowa last season. I mean, two touchdowns, one of them being special teams. It was an impressive performance. But I mean, you mentioned his ability on special teams. If we're going to talk about punt returners, you could also talk about Caden Wiegand for Iowa and what he's been able to do. Do you see Penn State trying to avoid punting to Caden Wiegand? Because there have been a couple times where some teams will punt to him and sometimes it hasn't happened. And I'm curious to hear your take on how you would think Penn State would maybe handle both scenarios.
Yeah, you know, and this is also kind of definitely weird, but James Franklin kept banging the drum for like the last several weeks that Penn State's special teams has been the most consistent unit on the team. And I kept saying, well, yeah, because the offense and defense are a mess. Like, I got it. But like, Penn State is capable of making some big time special teams plays. But I mean, the other thing that Iowa fans will get a kick out of is Penn State's punter, Gabe Nwosu, is a massive human being. Like, he looks like a defensive lineman. So they will absolutely love watching him punt. Super talented kid, big leg. In fact, if Penn State goes for like a 55 plus yard field goal, he'll be the guy doing it as opposed to their field goal kicker. I think special teams coordinator Justin Lustig would probably try to pin him in and not punt to him. But I'm also curious what kind of chances, and this is just like Penn State as a whole, what kind of chances do they maybe take in this game that we wouldn't see if they were more competitive, if they still were in the playoff race? Because they were on the receiving side of this when they went out to UCLA, where UCLA goes up 7-0 and then comes out right away and rips an onside kick that Penn State was totally caught off guard by. Like, I just wonder if you're Penn State, your coach is fired, you're 3-3, do you try to create some opportunities for yourself on special teams, maybe? Just kind of something to maybe think about.
No, I completely agree, because I was even saying it earlier this week, you know, UCLA turned around and they did that, their performance against Penn State after their head coach was fired. How likely is it possible that that scenario happens with Penn State, that this firing of James Franklin, as much as it's been difficult and it's an emotional locker room right now, how much does that light a fire under this team? Because they're not playing in a sense of, like you said, they're kind of playing with house money with a 500 record, and they're now auditioning for whatever their future may hold. So how much of that just kind of goes into, let's just see what happens?
For sure. I mean, and I think it's Penn State's probably going to be one of two extremes Saturday night. It's either going to be, hey, this is a galvanized group, like, and they were even talking about, like, let's go win it for James Franklin. Like, let's show a kind of team that we thought we are, that we think we still are. Or it's, hey, we're done. We're totally out of this. This season is not what we thought. We're folding. Like, I think you're going to see pretty early on what they are. But I will say interim head coach Terry Smith, I think, is the right guy for this job, right temperament for it. And he said, he's like, when you guys come and talk to me Saturday, like, you're not going to be asking about effort and toughness. Like, that's that's the one thing we are going to have correct. Like, we might not win the game, but like, you're going to see these guys playing tough. But yeah, I mean, I also too, and like, I don't have the answer to this, but like, how does James Franklin watch the game Saturday night? Does he watch it? I think so. I would imagine so. That's gotta be a weird experience for him too. And you know, there's just so many layers to it. And Terry Smith told us that he reached out this week to Penn State's last interim head coach, Tom Bradley, who of course took over for Joe Paterno at the end of that 2011 season. The thing that's so interesting, and I said this a couple weeks ago when James Franklin was still the head coach, after they lost to Oregon, after they lost to UCLA, I said, wouldn't the funniest thing be if this is the Penn State team that finally beats Ohio State when, like, it really doesn't matter? And I think that scenario is still at play because Penn State in 2011 with interim head coach Tom Bradley went out to Columbus, beat the Buckeyes. So, yeah, I mean, like, you could see a spirited team, a team that looks like, you know, that they're angry. Like, I do think that's the other piece of this is Terry Smith said, yeah, like, this is the sport where you can go and let your aggression out. And you could definitely sense that anger and the anger and, hey, like, the athletic director came in here this week and fired our head coach. Like, there's certainly some, you know, some anger with that too. So I think we're going to see early, you know, what they are. But yeah, it is so tough to even try and figure this team out. But then you add the emotional complexity to it and it's like, good luck.
Yeah. The last question I have for you here, obviously the major national side of this is how this fallout is going to happen. The audition for Terry Smith to potentially even be in the conversation of taking over this program after he finishes this interim spot. Who does Penn State look at maybe outside of the university, if it's Matt Rhule, if they try to give a call to Kurt Cignetti or whoever else they might have on their list. But how much of the national conversation could potentially impact the rest of Penn State's even just beyond the Iowa game? Obviously, there's a lot going on right now. You're seeing recruits on a national level all of a sudden starting to make these decisions. You're seeing so much of this fallout happen. How does anybody kind of sort through all of this fallout that's going on while also trying to prepare for a Big Ten football game?
Yeah, it's crazy because, I mean, there's so many layers to it. And, you know, I think the other part is the timeline, right? Like, it is October 15th and you're like, oh, like, this is insanely early to start a coaching search. You know, so if you're Penn State, you do it now and you say, okay, like, it gives James Franklin an opportunity to figure out what he wants to do next year. It gives Penn State their opportunity to kind of have maybe the pick of candidates or at least have a lot of initial feeler conversations, which is what I think we're going to start seeing at the end of this week and next week. Because again, this is still so early on that, like, they're not moving on anyone right now. But yeah, Matt Rhule is absolutely in that conversation. He's very close friends with Penn State's athletic director, Pat Kraft. These are guys, obviously, that work together at Temple. You look at what Rhule's done at Baylor, what he's doing at Nebraska. But here's the other thing to think about with that. You know, if Nebraska ends up going 10-2 and they're in the playoff, well, then you're playing in late December, and that messes with Penn State's timeline, and that then impacts signing day and this recruiting class. And so what do you do? Like, I think you ideally want to have your head coach probably by that first, second week of December. But that also means you have to have a coach who most likely isn't in the playoff, which, okay, like, that maybe takes Indiana out of the conversation. Kalen DeBoer, like, what happens if Alabama continues to kind of flame out? Like, could that be an option? Eli Drinkwitz is certainly a name that we've heard a lot about too. Like, could that be an option? You know, but when you make the move that Penn State made by moving on from James Franklin, you're taking big swings. Like, that's what that move is. Like, you're trading the stability of 9, 10 win, maybe 11 win seasons for the hope of actually winning a national championship and going all in. But what if you don't get whoever's at the top of that candidate list, right? That's where I think all of this gets so interesting. But yeah, I mean, it is, I've never covered a team that's had a coaching search start this early in the year for football. Like, this is certainly a new one, and this is my 15th season covering these guys. You know, but it's just, this is where they're at, and they felt it was right to make the move now. But I mean, you also, like, it was super funny on Monday after Terry Smith gets done talking to the media and he answers all the questions and he stands up and everybody kind of looks at him and he pauses and he goes, "Everybody, pray for me." And I mean, and that I think is like, he said it smiling, laughing, but also like there's a level of seriousness to that where he's got to try to keep this team together. He's got to prepare for a game this week. He's got a new starting quarterback. You've got kids that are angry that their head coach got fired. He's trying to audition for this head coaching job. You know, it's just a lot. And also like you're going on the road too. So like there's that angle to it. But yeah, it is going to be a massive national storyline of how this plays out. And, you know, we all thought that Penn State would be certainly nationally relevant this year, but we did not think it would be nationally relevant because of a coaching search.
Yeah, it's a nationally relevant, but not in the way any of us would have expected. Yeah. If you had asked us back in August, that would be like,
yeah.
Well, Audrey, I greatly appreciate your time. This has been such a great conversation. Hope you have a safe trip out here this weekend. I know that you said that you've been traveling every week and you got a flight Thursday afternoon. So yep. Looking forward to having you out in Iowa City. If you all like this content, Hawk Off the Press comes out every week, as well as my newsletter with the exact same name that has all of the content that myself and the rest of the Gazette sports staff does regarding Iowa football. Thank you so much for watching, and we will see you next time.
Not a Gazette subscriber? There's no better time to support local journalism. View our latest deals for print and digital offerings at thegazette.com/subscribe. Stay informed. Be empowered. Subscribe to The Gazette today at thegazette.com/subscribe.